Today's shiur is Masech Menachos, Daf Tzadik Daled, and we will begin on Daf Tzadik Gimel on the Beis at the bottom of the Amud at the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, Chaymer v'smicha, v'smicha v'tnufa. We've been learning in our shiurim the halachas of smicha and tnufa, and teaches us our Mishnah that smicha has a stringency over tnufa. And on the other hand, says the Mishnah, v'tnufa v'smicha, so too does tnufa have certain chumras over smicha. She'echad menes l'kol ha'chaverim, as we have been learning, one person could do tnufa on behalf of all the people who are bringing the carbon. Ve'enechad soim l'kol ha'chaverim, while one person cannot do smicha for all of the people who are participating in bringing the carbon, everybody has to do their own smicha. Chaim b'tnufa. On the other hand, there's a chumra by tnufa that doesn't exist by smicha. She tnufa na heges, the kabbanas ha-yachud, the kabbanas ha-tziva. Tnufa is done both on carbon yachud and carbon tziva. Even though, as the Mefarshim point out, we have learned there are two carbon tziva where smicha is done. The par helm davish al tziva and the soir la'azazel, but still, since most situations there is no smicha on a carbon tzibur, whereas there is tnufa, so the Mishnah statement that tnufa has this chumra is still applicable. There are those that want to connect the halacha to chayim and shchutim to the halacha of tzibur and yachid, because even when you do smicha on a carbon, you only do it b'chaim and not b'shchutim. It's a difficult teretz because chaim and shchutim are their own independent status and doesn't have anything to do with carbon tzibur and carbon yachid. And therefore, the Mishnah continues, tnufa is done both on animals when they're still alive. We know that the kifsei atzeres that come along with the shtei halechem, they did tnufa while the animal was alive, and then they did tnufa again on the chaz of a shayk. Ubedavish yesh beruchayim. Tnufa is done on living things. Ubedavish ein beruchayim. On a non-living things, because as we learned and we'll discuss again, there is tnufa done on a karbon mincha, which is not a living thing. Smicha, on the other hand, is always only done on animals. There's never smicha on a karbon mincha. Hashem came with smicha, and that's why tnufa has all of these chumras over smicha. Begins the braisa. Tana Rabbanan, the braisa teaches us karbonai. The pasuk says with karbonai, v'lavois kol ba'alei karbon v'smicha, that all of the participants, all the people who are owners of this carbon, have to participate in the smicha. Shiyachol, because we could have made an argument, v'loy dinhu, or ma tnufa, if we speak about tnufa, shnesraps b'shchutim, which as we just explained, is even done on animals after they're slaughtered. Nismata b'chayvrim, that lachi is one person does smicha for the entire group. Smicha, so certainly smicha, shloines raps b'shchutim. As we just learned in our Mishnah, smicha is only done on a live animal. It's never done on the animal after it's slaughtered. Ein adin shnismata b'chayvrim. There certainly that lachi ought to be that smicha is only done for, is only one person should do smicha. Not that everybody should have to do their own smicha. Tama loimer, that's why the Torah says karbonai. L'rabbis kol ba'alei karbon l'smicha, to teach us that every one of the people who bring the carbon, who participates in bringing the carbon, has to do smicha. So Tosfos asks that maybe indeed after learning this that smicha is done by every person who brings the carbon, whereas by tnufa, tnufa is done by one person on behalf of everybody. Maybe indeed smicha should be done even on shchutim. Answer the Mefarshim that we can't say that smicha is done on shchutim, Because we just learned in the previous daf that the Torah said v'samach v'shochat, that takeif l'smicha shchita, that the smicha and the shchita have to take place one after the other. If smicha could be done even on shchutim, that limud wouldn't make any sense. Continues the Gebraisa, v'tisrabe tenufa b'chayvrim, we should indeed perhaps say that one person should be able to, that the halacha should be that everybody should have to do their own tenufa with the following kavachomer. Or mas smicha, if we speak about smicha, slaughter straps of the shkutim, that we said that there is no smicha on slaughtered animal. Still, the halacha is the straps of the chayvrim. The halacha is that everybody has to do their own smicha tenufa. Shnes apsa b'shchutim. Tenufa, where we say that tenufa is not only done on the animal when it's alive, but it's done even after it's slaughtered. Ein adin shnes apsa b'chayvrim. That the halacha ought to be that everybody should have to do their own tenufa. Answers the Gemara that the halacha should be that one person should be able to do the tenufa on behalf of the entire group. If by smicha we say that one person could do, everybody has to do their own smicha, shouldn't we say the same thing by tenufa, that one person should do this tenufa on behalf of everybody? Answers the Gemara, Mishum Deloyevsha. How can we say that everybody should have to do their own tenufa? Heich le'evet. How could it possibly be that everybody should do their own tenufa? Linfa kula b'hadei adodi. Should we suggest that everybody should do the tenufa together? Kavachatzitza. That would be impossible, because since one person's hands would be under the other person's hand, and the halacha is that everybody has to do the tenufa touching the carbon itself, so it is impossible for them to do it all at the same time. Linfa v'hedda linfa. On the other hand, we would suggest that one person should do the tenufa, and then the next person should do it after it. Says the Gemara, that also isn't a possibility. Because tenufa amrachman, the Torah said one tenufa should be done, v'loy tenufos, and not many tenufas. And if it's going to be that everybody's going to do their own tenufa, to do it all at the same time, we just explained, is impossible. To do it one after the other is a violation of tenufa v'loy tenufos. Therefore, there is no other option but to say that the tenufa is done by one for the entire group. So the Rishonim point out that we learned that the Gemara teaches us that when a person brings a does tenufas chazav b'shoik, when a person brings a carbon shlamin, and the owner has to do tenufas chazav b'shoik with the kayin, the way it was done is that the kayin, that the owner put his hand under the carbon, and then the kayin put his hand under the hand of the owner. Now the question is, if we're saying now that the halacha is that tenufa, you have to be touching the actual carbon, so how is it possible, how is that a valid tenufa if the kayin's hands weren't actually touching the carbon itself? So Rashi, when we learned that sugya and daf samach aleph, explained that actually the chiyuv smicha is really on the owners. The kohen is only there to participate and help the owner do the tenufa, and therefore, even though the kohen isn't actually touching the carbon, it doesn't affect the validity of the tenufa. Whereas in our Gemara, every person is a owner of the carbon and has to do a full-fledged tenufa, and if the kohen is going to, and if they're not going to be able to hold the carbon, then there's a problem. But Tosfos in that Gemara, because of this question that we just asked, that how will the smicha be done, how will the tenufa be done if the kohen's hands are under the hands of the owner, says that indeed it's not that the kohen put his hand under the owner, but the kohen put his hands on the bottom under the carbon, and that the owner put the hand at the side of the carbon. And therefore, as Tosfos explained, since there are only two people involved in doing that tenufa, the kohen and the owner, there's enough room for both of them to hold the carbon directly. The problem with that, the issue that the Sfasemis brings up after we learn this pshat, is that if so, he asks, that in our Gemara makes a statement that tenufa cannot be done by all of the owners because there isn't enough room for all of the owners to hold the carbon. So asks the Sfasemis. Indeed, if there are many people bringing the carbon isn't large enough for all of them to be able to hold a hand by the carbon. But if it's a situation where there's a minimal amount of partners, there perhaps one person, then there's enough room for each partner to be holding the animal at a different place. And why is Agamar making an absolute statement that tenufa cannot be done by all of the owners? There's enough room for each person to hold the animal at a different place. And the Sfasemis, in fact, doesn't answer this question. Furthermore, the Mefarshim point out that our Gemara is clearly indicating that if one person puts his hands under another person's hands, that would be a chatzitza. Even though they're both hands, and we have a rule throughout Shas, min deminoi ein achaitzitz, so why is my hand, which is a hand, a chatzitza for your hand, which is also a hand? So I actually saw two different approaches how to answer this question. There's some that suggest that the reason it's considered chatzitza is because here the Torah specifically went out of its way to say that everybody should be touching the carbon directly. So since the Torah went out of its way to say that everybody has to be touching the carbon directly, even if we say in other areas of halacha, min b'minoi ein achaitzitz, here it will be considered a chatzitza. That's one approach that I saw that the Mefarshim take. But other Mefarshim say that even if we say min b'minoi ein achaitzitz, my hand and your hand cannot be considered one and the same. And it's actually very relevant lahalacha. I saw it's relevant lahalacha in two different places. One place that I saw that it's relevant is regarding the shaila, if somebody is not wearing a yarmulke, and specifically he wants to say a davar shebekedusha, and we know that a davar shebekedusha may not be said when you're not wearing a yarmulke. So certainly the halacha is you can't put your own hand on top of your head, that should be considered a covering. But the question is, could somebody else put his hand on my head, that should be considered a valid covering? If we'll say that my hand and your hand are min b'minoi, so just like my hand can serve as a valid covering, so too can your hand not serve as a valid covering. But if, on the other hand, we're going to say that my hand and your hand are considered two different minim, then your hand can be a covering on my head. Our Gemara, that clearly seems to say that your hand and my hand are chatzitza, and therefore I can't put my hand under your hand to do tenufa, the halach would be that your hand can be considered a valid covering on my head. But then I saw it's relevant to a different shayla. The shayla of Tshuva's Torah Lishma discusses a situation where somebody, where there's a child who's taking the lulav, the dalaminim, on Sukkos, and his father or another adult are obviously concerned that the child should not wrap the lulav. So he puts his hands around the child's hand, and he shakes the lulav with the child. And the question is that considered that the adult who did this was mekayim mitzvah of nanuim, the mitzvah of properly shaking the lulav? And the Shalosh Tshuvos Torah Lishma says that of course not. Because if our Gemara said that if my hand is under someone else's hand, it's considered a chatzitza, it's not considered like I'm actually holding the carbon, so too will be the halacha, he says, regarding the dalaminim, where the halacha requires that I actually hold the dalaminim, Here I'm not actually holding the Dalaminim. It's the child that's holding the Dalaminim. And therefore the halacha would be that, and my hand is only around his hand. Therefore he says the halacha would be that it would be considered that I did not fulfill the mitzvah. And I certainly would have to take the Dalaminim again and hold them properly. The Chazon Yecheskel explains that our Gemara that differentiated between Tenufa and Smicha, that our Gemara is teaching us that Tenufa should be done by one person for all the other people, whereas Smicha is done by each person himself, explains because there's a fundamental difference in the requirement that the Torah made by Tenufa versus the requirement that the Torah has for Smicha. He explains, by Tenufa, the Torah required that the animal, the carbon, be waved. And as soon as the animal is waved, it doesn't make a difference if it was waved by every one of the owners or was waved only by one, the mitzvah Tenufa has been fulfilled. Whereas, by Smicha, the Torah wants that each and every owner should do his own independent Smicha. And since the Torah wants that each and every owner should do his own independent smicha, so therefore it isn't adequate that just one smicha is done, rather every owner has to do smicha. And he goes on to explain, with this we could understand what the Gemara said in the previous Stafim, that there is no shlichus, that I can't appoint a shliach to do smicha on my behalf. Because the Torah wants that the owner himself should do smicha. It's a requirement that if somebody brings a carbon, he has to do smicha, and therefore shlichus isn't an option by smicha. Just like the Torah wants that everybody should hear the shofar himself, and somebody can't appoint somebody else to hear the shofar on his behalf, so too is the halacha regarding smicha. Ask the Gemara. Our Mishnah made a statement that there is no smicha b'shchutin. Ask the Gemara, smicha b'shchutin leisa? Is this indeed the halacha that there is no smicha by a slaughtered animal? Vatnan. The Mishnah says in the Sechta Tomit. The halacha is, as we know, the Kohanim were divided into Mishmayus. Different weeks, every week a different Mishma. But the halacha, as the Mishnah Sechta Tomit teaches us, that the Kohen Gadol has a right to choose that he could always do the Avoida what he wants to do the Avoida. And therefore teaches us the Mishnah there. This man shall Kohen Gadol writes to Lahakdir, if the Kohen Gadol wants to burn the carbon himself, he would walk up the ramp, the scamb, you mean, the scamb Kohen Gadol would walk to his right, even though I saw the Mefarshim ask that the Gemara says in Masechta Erevin that Hahoylech Lamin Rabbi, if somebody walks to the right of his Rebbe, Hareza Bor, he's an Amoritz, so how is the scamb allowed to walk to the right of the Kohen Gadol? So I saw a number of terutzim. One terutz is that he didn't walk directly at his right, he walked a little behind him. Another pshat that I saw is that since the left of the Kohen Gadol, as he walking up the ramp, is the Beis HaMikdash, so that did not want there should be any person between the Kohen Gadol and the Beis HaMikdash, so there was no option other than the Kohen, that the Skan walking to his right. And the third pshat, which becomes understandable as we begin our Gemara, is that indeed, normally one may not walk to the right of his Rebbe. But if he's walking to the right of his Rebbe to assist his Rebbe, then certainly it's permitted. And that was the purpose over here for the scan walking to the right. And that's why it's permitted. So again, says the Mishnah, Haya oyla bekevesh, the Kohen Gadol walked up the ramp, the scan b'yaminoi, they got to the midpoint of the ramp. The scan held onto the right hand of the Kohen Gadol to help him walk up the ramp. As the Mishnah over there, Masechta Tamid, describes, there were either 11 or 12 or 13 Kohanim involved in the bringing of the Karban Tamid. So the first, and they were chosen by Goyro, they were chosen by Lats. So the first Kohen gives him Harosh Varegel, gives him the head and the right hind leg of the carbon. Soymech Aleihem, the Kohen Gadol does smicha v'zorken, and he throws them into the fire. Hoshir Hashem Elorishim, then the second Kohen of this group, gives to the first Kohen, Shtei Yadayim, the two forelegs, Noisim Kohen Gadol, and he would give him to the Kohen Gadol, Samech Alayim V'Zarkan, again the Kohen Gadol would do Smicha and throw him into the fire, Nishmat Hasheni V'Holochloi, after the second Kohen goes away, he goes away, and then the third Kohen goes, V'Kachoy Meshitin L'Kol Evarim, and that's how all of the limbs were given to the Kohen, Kohen Gadol, Samech Alayim V'Zarkan, where he did Smicha and threw it onto the fire. Bezman, Shuhu writes, if he wanted Husameach, he would only do the Smicha and Acherim Zarkin, and other people would do the Zrika. But we see clearly from here that Smicha was done even on Shchutim. Yet our Mishnah says that Smicha is not done on Shchutim. Answers the Gemara, Amar Abaya, Hasam Shem Foyedir Kohen Gadol. It's not that it's a full-fledged act of smicha. It was only done out of honor to the Kohen Gadol, and therefore we shouldn't learn from there the halachas of smicha, because this is a very unique situation, because they wanted to show honor to the Kohen Gadol, so that's why they did this procedure, not that there's any halachic requirement to do smicha when in this way, or they wanted to show as if the Kohen Gadol was involved in the tie of carbon. By him doing smicha on each part of the carbon, it shows that he's involved in the tie of carbon. Harim loch shtei midas, harim loch shtei midas, harim loch shtei midas. Says the Mishnah, shtei alechem, we know that there was shtei alechem brought on shuas. Says the Mishnah, niloishis achas achas, was prepared, the kneading was done one chal at a time, for nefesh achas achas. And they were baked one chal at a time. The lechem upon him, the 12 lechem upon him that were brought every Shabbos. Here too says the Mishnah, Niloishis achas achas, were each prepared, kneaded one by one. However, nefesh tayim shtayim, they were baked two at a time. So as we're going to see in Mitzvah Shem in the Gemara, the requirement that they be baked, that they be prepared one at a time, is based on psukim. The reason, however, explains the Chazon Ish, that the Torah insists that they be prepared one at a time, because the Torah says that each loaf has to be made up at a certain amount of flour and isarin, and there's a concern that if they're going to be baked, if they're going to be prepared together, then they won't each have the proper amount of flour. And as the Chazon Ish goes on to explain, it doesn't mean that they necessarily all look the same, because we know it depends on how much water is added to the dough. It depends on a lot of how much kneading it was done to the dough, which all plays a role in how the loaf will look. What the Mishnah means to say is that since we want that each one should be comprised only of a certain amount of flour, the only way this can be assured is by preparing each loaf separately. But now we have an interesting machloikus achroinim. The Mishnah says that the shtei alechem was baked one by one. So the lekutei halachis, the Chofetz Chaim says, that the Mishnah is to be taken literally, that each challah had to be baked, of the shtei alechem, had to be baked separately. However, there are other achroinim that say, pshat in the Mishnah is, it doesn't mean that it had to be baked one by one. The preparation, as we just explained, indeed, had to be done individually. But when it comes to the baking, the Mishnah is saying it could be baked separately, but it also could be baked both at the same time. And there's a similar machloikus achroinim regarding the lechem aponim, where there too the achroinim say that certainly when it comes to the preparation of the lechem aponim, as we explained, the preparation had to be done one loaf at a time. But when it comes to the baking, some achronim suggest, again like the Mishnah seems to say, that they could only be baked two at a time, whereas there are other achronim that suggest that it could be baked even more than two at a time. They could be baked all at the same time. The Mishnah is just saying that the minimum is to bake them two at a time. And in fact, I saw that the Karen Iris suggests that not only is the halacha that they can be baked two at a time, but the halacha actually is that they must be baked two at a time. for he they have to be baked all 12 at the same time. All the Mishnah's meaning is regarding their being placed in the oven. When it comes to them being placed in the oven, that's where the Karen Ayur says the Mishnah's teaching us that they can be put two at a time. But the baking has to be all 12. Why? Because the Karen Ayur cites the Gemara that we learned previously, that, and we're going to discuss this concept more, that it's the Tanur that's Mekadosh the Shtei Alechem. And since it's the Tanur that's Mekadosh the Shtei Alechem, the halacha is that a Kli Shoreth is not Mekadosh unless you put the entire proper amount. So therefore, in order for the Tanur to have the ability to Mekadosh the Lechem upon him, you have to put in all 12 loaves for it to be effective. That's how the Karen Ayur learns. There are other Achroinim who disagree and say that even though normally the halacha indeed is that a Kli Shoreth is only Mekadosh when you put in the entire shear, that halacha would not apply regarding the baking of the lechem upon it. Because they explain that that halacha only applies to a carbon where we're going to be taking kmitza from that carbon. Here we're not taking kmitza because we know the kmitza is not taken from the lechem upon him themselves. Rather, the kmitza is the shtei bezichei levoina, and therefore this halacha doesn't apply. Another way that the Achroinim explain why this halacha wouldn't apply is since each challah, as we said a few moments ago, has its own shear. So since it has its own shear, each one is viewed as an independent carbon, and since it's as a dependent entity, and since it's identified an independent entity, therefore you don't have to put all of them together at the same time. Another pshat is that halacha only applies when you're dealing with regular kli shoreth. Here, as we just said, we're referring to the tanur, the halacha that kli shoreth are only mekadosh when you put in the entire shear is referring to kli shoreth, not to the tanur. Continues the Mishnah, ubetfus hayoisoison, they put the lechem upon him into molds, shuroidim, and when they would take it out of the oven, noisim letfus, they would put into another mold, teish leiskalkul. As we know, as we'll discuss later in the perek, the lechem upon him were baked on Friday, but they were only put into the oven on Shabbos, so in order that they should be able to hold their shape, they put the lechem upon him into mold till they put him into the actual shulchan. So the Mishnah has taught us that each of the l'shtei lechem or the lechem upon him are prepared in a separate mold. Ask the Gemara of Menon and Mili, from where do we know this halacha? Says the Gemara, Tanur Rabbanan, Shnei Asroinim Yachal Achas, Melamed Shinelayshus Achas Achas. They're prepared separately. That's a pasuk that a lechem upon him. Continue the Braisa, Menayin Sh'ashtei Alechem Kach. How do we know that the same halacha applies by the Shtei Alechem? Tamaloy Meyia. The pasuk has said, Shnei Asroinim Achal Achas. The Torah, by using the extra word Yia, comes to teach us that by the Shtei Alechem as well, there's a halacha that should be prepared separately. Umanayin, how do we know that by the lechem upon him, Shafiyosim Shtayim Shtayim, that they're baked two at a time? Tamaloymer, the pasuk says, V'samta Oysom, the pasuk uses the word Oysom, Loshen Rabim, to teach us that they're baked two at a time. Says the Braisa, Yochla Shtei Alechem Kein. So perhaps so too is the halacha by the Shtei Alechem, that they too should be baked two together. Tamiloimer oisom. Only by the lechem upon him is there such a halacha, not by the Shtei Alechem. Ask the Gemara, how can we say that the word oisom is coming to exclude that only by the lechem upon him should they be baked more than one at a time, not by the Shtei Alechem? Ha oisom, we needed the word oisom ha'afikte, we needed to teach us that the lechem upon him are baked two at a time. So it can't be used also to exclude the shtei lechem. Answers the Gemara. In kein le makra, it would have been enough for the Torah to use the word v'samtam. My v'samta oisom. Instead of saying v'samtam, the Torah used the word v'samta oisom. Shema minotarti, we learned two rules. One is that the lechem upon him are baked two at a time. And that this halach only applies by the lechem upon him and not by the shtei halechem. Tanra bona. Furthermore, says the Braisa, the Samta Oisom, the Tfus, that should be put into a mold. So as, just to summarize, we learn from these words of Samta Aysam a number of halachas. Number one, the fact that the Torah says Aysam, we learn that the lechem upon him is put two loaves at a time. The fact that the Torah used the word the Samta Aysam instead of the Samtan, we learn that it's only a halacha by the lechem upon him, not by the shtei lechem. And the fact that the Torah used the word the Samta instead of the word v'nosata, we learn that the lechem upon him are made in molds. They're made in molds. So now the Gemara begins to discuss the halacha of these molds that the lechem upon him are made in. Says the Braisa, shlosh tfusin heim, there are three molds. Noisn l'tfus v'adayinu batzik, first it was put into a mold when it was still dough. Ukumin tfus hoyla b'tana, then there was a mold in the oven itself. Kshuroida, and was taken out of the oven. Nois mitfus, it was again put into a mold. Kadesh l'tusakal, it shouldn't get room before they put it into the shulchan on Shabbos. Ask the Gemara, why do they have to have a new mold? Why don't they just put it back into the original mold? Answers the Gemara, kima de afalei, once it was baked, nafcha, it expanded, and it won't fit into the original mold, so that's why they needed a third mold. So as the Rishonim point out, even though our Mishnah only spoke about two molds, and the Braisa is speaking about three molds, it's not to be understood that there's necessarily a machloikis between the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Mishnah, and there are two ways that I saw that the Mefarshim explained why we shouldn't say that there's a machloikis. One explanation that I saw is that the Mishnah is not speaking about the first mold. Because as we just finished explaining, the lechem aponim only becomes kaddish when it's in the tanner. And our Mishnah is only referring to those molds where the lechem aponim is already kaddish. The mold before it's put into the oven, since at that point it's not yet kaddish, is not included in the discussion of our Mishnah. That's one approach that I saw. Another approach that I saw is that the mold that the Mishnah doesn't speak about is the mold of the oven, because the mold of the oven was a mold that was permanently affixed to the oven, and since it was permanently affixed to the oven, it is not included. It's not included and considered a regular mold since it's firmly attached to the oven. There's also a machlokes rishonim, out of which material these molds were made out of. From the Rambam, it seems that his opinion is that all of the molds were made out of gold. Rashi, however, says that the mold that was in the oven was not made out of gold. Since it was actually in the oven, and it's going to get ruined because of the fire, it was made out of metal. Furthermore, there's a machlokes rishonim exactly how the molds looked. So it seems that all rishonim agree that the first mold, the mold that was used to form the lechem upon him, was a regular mold where the dough was put into the mold. The question is, the mold that was used to bake the lechem upon him and the mold that was used after the lechem upon him was taken out of the oven, how did that mold look? Rashi seems to learn that it's like a regular mold where you put the bread into a baking pan. Tosfos, however, learns that it was different. It was a mold where the mold was inside the bread. And the explanation of Tosfos is based on what we're going to learn in the Gemara in a moment, that the lechem upon him had a hollow middle, and in order to make sure that middle remained hollow, they put a mold into the middle, and that kept the inside hollow. And Tosfos said that's one reason Tosfos says that the mold was in the middle. Another reason Tosfos says the mold was in the middle, because Tosfos says that bread was always baked on the oven itself, touching the floor of the oven. And if shot in the mold, in the baking pan, as we're suggesting, that it was put around the bread, then we wouldn't have the mold, we would not have the bread touching the floor of the oven, which is not the proper way of preparing bread. Which actually opens up to a very interesting discussion in the Paiskim. Two interesting shailos. One question is, we know that the halacha is that certainly whenever one breaks bread or whenever one makes a dough, if he makes it out of the proper amount of flour, he has to separate challah from that dough. And the question that the Paiskim say is that it's not only bread. It's certainly if you're making a yeast dough, chocolate cake, chocolate filled cake, which is made out of yeast dough, certainly you have to take also challah if you use the right amount of flour. And actually, the halacha is that also if you make a belila raka, like you make a sponge cake, which is a batter cake, the halacha is also that one should remove challah. But there, the removal is done after the cake is baked, not before the cake is baked. And the question that some Paiskim wanted to suggest is that since, even if you're making a lot of sponge cake, but each sponge cake is kept in its own baking pan, that should take away from the chi of challah, because each one is considered separate. Says the Tzemach Tzedek, our Gemara is a raya that that isn't correct, because our Gemara clearly indicates that even though the challahs were kept in separate baking pans, they still considered lechem aponim. So the fact that it's in a separate baking pan doesn't prevent them from combining for a chi of challah. But that's only if we follow the approach of Rashi. And Rashi said that each one had a regular baking pan. But if we follow the approach of Tosfos, that Tosfos says that the baking pan was an unusual baking pan. It was a baking pan on the inside, not on the outside. It could be, even though that's not the way most Tosfos paskin, it would be different. And then a halacha would indeed be that the baking pans separate the dough. Furthermore, we see over here that, again, according to the opinion of Rashi, the lechem aponim weren't directly on the floor of the oven. Rather, the lechem aponim were in baking pans, certainly according to the opinion of Rashi. And that question comes up regarding the baking of matzah, where in matzah, of course, we don't put matzahs into a baking pan, but the question comes up, could we bake matzah not in the matzah ovens that we're used to seeing, but rather in a matzah oven, which is more like the oven that we have in our homes, where the fire is not exposed? Because just like we see here that the lechem aponim was baked not on the floor of the oven, it didn't actually touch, didn't come in direct contact with the fire, so too, it could be the matzahs. We know the lechem aponim had to be matzah, or matzahs could be baked in a gas oven where the fire is not exposed. There are poskim that use this gemara as a raya to that point. One more interesting discussion in the poskim. Our Mishnah discusses the concern that the lechem aponim expanded during the baking. And the question is, we know, as we just said a moment ago, that the lechem aponim had to be matzah. And we also know that the Rama, quoting the Maril, says that a matzah in the fucha is not considered a matzah. So how do we reconcile the Rama's psak, that a matzah in the fucha is not kosher, with our Gemara that clearly seems to say that the lechem aponim expanded? So the simplest answer that I saw is that our Gemara, when it speaks about nefucha, it means that the lechem remained flat. It didn't rise, it just expanded in the length and in the width, but not in the height. However, there are other paiskim that suggest that it even expanded in the height, and that would be relevant to the question that I just mentioned, that the Rama says that a matzah nefucha is usur. Here we see that the lechem aponim, which were matzah, became the fucha. The Paiskim explain that there are actually two examples of what we consider the fucha. One example of the fucha is where there's an air bubble in the matzah. And another definition of the fucha is where the matzah goes up. An air bubble, where there's a separation of the upper and lower part, and his ear in between, there is a concern that there might be unbaked dough. And that's where there's a concern of a matzah nefucha that the Ramah discusses. Whereas a matzah that just has bumps, the part of the matzah goes up, there perhaps we could be more lenient, and that's maybe what the Gemara here means, because there is less of a concern. So as we begin now to discuss the actual makeup of the Lechem Aponim, as we said, the Lechem Aponim were 12 loaves, two rows, six of each. They were put on the Shulchan on two piles. Each pile is called a Mareches. Between the Lechem, between each loaf, there were three poles, as we're going to learn, to prevent the Lechem Aponim from becoming moldy. And then on the two, there were snifim, as the Gemara will see in a moment, four snifim, two for each row, to keep the Lechem Aponim in place. Itmar, says the Gemara, Lechem Aponim. When we speak about the Lechem Aponim, takes it ois noisai. And there's an interesting Chazanish. The Chazanish points out that even though our Gemara now will describe how the Lechem Aponim looked, it's only how they typically made the Lechem Aponim. But says the Chazon Ish that there is no specific form that is absolutely necessary how the Lechem Aponim must look. So again, says the Gemara, how did the Lechem Aponim look? The Chnina Mekinin Teva Kutsa, it looked like an open box, two sides standing and a flat bottom. Rabbi Yochanan Mekinin Sfinah Rekedus, it looked like a boat. We know a boat is narrow on the bottom. The reason it's narrow on the bottom is Rekedus, so it should be able to travel, Rekedus, to travel quickly. And it looked more like a V. Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, if the sides of the Lechem Aponim moved up on a slant, completely on a slant, or first it was a slant and then it moved up straight. And Rashi's of the opinion that it was on a slant the entire time. And in fact, we're going to learn the Gemara by Rashi words. Says the Gemara, Bishlam amand amakim in Teva Kutsa. According to amand amakim that it looked like a Teva Kutsa, hani da avi yasu bezichin. As we're going to learn later, there are bezichin levayin that are put in the Lechem Aponim, and the machlokes between Abishol and Rabbanim exactly where those bezichin levayin were put. The Rabbanim held that the bezichim were put on top of the highest loaf of bread. Abishol, on the other hand, holds that the bezichim were put between the rows. And now, the Gemara's question is that according to the Rabbanim, that the bezichim were put on the uppermost loaf, so ask the Gemara, Bishlam l'mand amit men teva putza, did it look like a teva putza, hanin hei v'yasvi bezichim? It's very understandable where they could put these spoons on the flat part of the bread. Elamanda omikamin sphinorikedis, according to the manda omik, that it looked like a ship. Hey, chaviyasi bezichin, where was the place for the bezichin? Since there was no flat bottom, how could they rest there? Answers the Gemara. Makam ovid luchu. They would hollow out a place on the bottom, flatten it out, that they could deposit the bezichim there. Continues the Gemara. Bishlal madama kementeva putza, hanidav yosvi konim. As we said, there were three poles between each bread. So if we said that the bread was flat, so the bread could rest on those three poles. Elamandam kementsvinarikadis, that it looked like a V, it was narrow on the bottom and then widened on the top. Konim hechav yosvi. That means we have three poles under each bread. But the bread is not wide on the bottom. It's very narrow on the bottom. So what were those three, where were those three poles resting? Answer the Gemara, Marsha Avalahu. They would make little extra pieces of dough on the sides of the V, of the Sfinah Rekedes, that the pole could be under. Continues the Gemara. As I said, there were there were boards on the side. So according to my government, it was flat on the bottom and then straight on the side. Those boards, two boards, so you had the lechem one on top of the other, and then the two boards were on the side, keeping everything in place. Elamandam k'min svinarikedes, hechasamcha svinifunolechem. Most of the place was open because it was like a V. It wasn't flush against the wall. Answers the Gemara, the Ogalumaga. A number of ways of understanding this teretz. One teretz is that it was on the bottom, like semicircle, and since on the bottom there was a curve that kept them in place. Another shot is that out of the sides of the wall there were like little pieces that came out shaped like a semicircle, and each bread rested on that piece that came out of the wall. A third shot is that the entire wall was like not straight, but it was more like in a circular, it was more circular, and that's how it kept the bread in place, because the bread was circular and they fit perfectly between these two semicircle snifim. Now the Gemara goes the other way. Bishlama madamikmin spinarikedes hainadabin and snifim. Now we understand why they needed support, because they're not really very solid. It has a very narrow bottom. Elamandamikmin teva putz, that it had a flat bottom. Asked the Gemara, Snifin Lamali, why did the Torah require Snifin? Answered the Gemara, Agav Yukra the Lechem Tlach. Because all the breads rested one on top of the other, there's a concern they would break. So we needed this support to make sure that they don't crush one or the other. Bishlam Lamandam commits Svinir Kedis, Snifin Agav Shnochem Menochem. According to Mandam, they look like Svinir Kedis. Now we understand that they had these snifim below the bread, either below the bottom bread, as we said before, or below each bread. Elamandam command teva prutza, according to Mandam, it was a teva prutza, snifim ha'chamanachlu. How did the snifim stand? Answers the Gemara, a'aramanachlu. Was it just standing on the ground? Answers the Gemara, in. Domer of Abba bar Mamel, the devri aymuk svin sinere kedes, snifim agabo shulchan menachem. They were on the shulchan. That the bread should rest actually on the snifim. Amanda Amit Kamin Teva Prutza, Snifal Gabakat Menachem, they just stood on the ground and the bread one on top of the other, and they were just on the two sides of the breads. Says the Gemara, Kaman Azla Hada Amar of Yehuda, Halechem Mamidas Asnifim, Asnifim Mamidim Asalechem, the bread supports the snifim and the snifim support the bread. Says the Gemara, Kaman Amar, it's like the Madam that says Svinu Rikedis, and therefore each one secures the other one in proper place. Meisvei asked the Gemara, it says in a Braisa, Kamin Kaveris Hayula Betana. There was a basket in the oven in which the Lechem Apana was baked. The Doima Kamin Tavla Murubas, and it looked like a square tablet. So clearly, isn't this an indication that the bread looked like a Teva Prutza? Answers the Gemara, Ema ufia doima kimin tavul merbaz. It was only the opening at the top that looked that way, so it should be easy to get the bread in if it was wide on top. But the actual mold on the bottom was indeed looked like a svina rakedis. And in fact, says the Gemara, Tanya commanded Oma kimin svina rakedis. There's a braisa that says that the bread looked like a svina rakedis. The Tanya, Arba snifin. So Zav HaYisham, there were four of these snifim. Mfutzon Rishon Kmed Akronim Haya, they looked like reeds, branch reeds. So something by Selechem, that on which the bread actually rested. Shudaymer, because the bread itself looked like a sphinar, Kmed Sphinar Akedis. The Farshim explained, what is the lesson of the lechem looking like a Teva Prutza, or the lechem looking like a Sphinar Akedis? So Sodom Farshim explained, we know that the Shulchan represents Parnasa. It's the lesson of the Parnasa that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. And the lesson of the Sfina Rekedis is that when a ship goes to sea, it bounces like a Sfina Rekedis up and down. so too our panasa is going to kriyam, is like kriyas yamsuf, and we're in the hands of Hashem like a sfina rekedes. According to the mandom, that looked like a teva putza, a wide open teva. The lesson is that we should open our homes, our lives, to give tzedakah to people who need panasa, people who need tzedakah. By us giving them tzedakah, that will bring panasa to our homes.